sights or something, but they ain't for free. Looking at them wired for sound. The road goes on forever, party at 10. To run forever if you never let it end.
Tanner, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram time.
It's 5 o'clock.
You're listening to WSKV, Pickup Country.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you for joining us tonight on Pickup Country 104.9 WSKV for our new and exciting Pick Me a Story series, where you'll embark on a journey through the pages of different stories read aloud by featured librarians from the Powell County Public Library. You can tune in live right here on Pickup Country 104.9 WSKV, listen online or on demand at listenlikealocal.com with our free mobile app from the Google Play or App Store or on Apple Podcast. My name is Kelly Ward, and I am the Teen and Adult Services Librarian at the Powell County Public Library. I'll be reading all kinds of different books to you from different genres, like sci-fi and fantasy, westerns, mysteries, and more. Be healthy at home with the whole family and enjoy the storytelling service provided by Pickup Country 104.9 WSKV and the Powell County Public Library. Pick Me a Story will be every Thursday at 6 o'clock p.m. right here on your hometown station, and we're so excited you can join us tonight. Let's get started. Before we get started with tonight's show, I just wanted to share with you all a little bit of information about the Friends of the Powell County Public Library's upcoming blind book sale. Drop by the public library in Stanton this Saturday between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. for a blind bagged book sale. Books are bagged by genre for $5 a piece. Also, this Saturday, the 19th, is also National Talk Like a Pirate Day. Arr, you're sure to shiver your timbers at this mystery book sale. Yarr. For more information, check out the official event on the Powell County Public Library's Facebook page, and hopefully you won't hear me talk like a pirate again tonight. But, moving on, I also wanted to let you all know that next Thursday at 5 p.m. is the last show for Pick Me a Story. I'm pretty sad about it, but I hope you've enjoyed the show during the past 6 months. Tonight, we'll be reading the short story, The Birds, by writer Daphne du Maurier. If you just thought to yourself, I wonder if this story is anything like the Hitchcock movie The Birds, then you guessed correctly. This original story is the inspiration behind the iconic movie, and is just as eerie and suspenseful as the film. In this story, we are introduced to a man and his family going about their simple lives in the British countryside. Everything is normal in the family's life, until one night, 50 birds suddenly attack the house and family inside. And, of course, things only get worse. This story is a little bit longer than usual, so we'll probably finish it up next week for the last show. This is The Birds by Daphne du Maurier. I hope you enjoy it, and thank you for listening. On December the 3rd, the wind changed overnight, and it was winter. Until then, the autumn had been mellow, soft. The leaves had lingered on the trees, golden red, and the hedgerows were still green. The earth was rich where the plow had turned it. Nat Hawken, because of a wartime disability, had a pension and did not work full-time at the farm. He worked 3 days a week, and they gave him the lighter jobs, hedging, thatching, repairs to the farm buildings. Although he was married, with children, his was a solitary disposition. He liked best to work alone. It pleased him when he was given a bank to build up, or a gate to mend at the far end of the peninsula, where the sea surrounded the farmland on either side. Then, at midday, he would pause and eat the pasty that his wife had baked for him, and, sitting on the cliff's edge, would watch the birds. Autumn was best for this, better than spring. In spring, the birds flew inland, purposeful, intent. They knew where they were bound. The rhythm and ritual of their life brooked no delay. In autumn, those that had not migrated overseas but remained to pass the winter were caught up in the same driving urge. But because migration was denied them, followed a pattern of their own. Great flocks of them came to the peninsula, restless, uneasy, spending themselves in motion. now wheeling, circling in the sky, now settling to feed on the rich, new-turned soil. But even when they fed, it was as though they did so without hunger, without desire. Restlessness drove them to the skies again. Black and white, jackdaw and gull, mingled in strange partnership, seeking some sort of liberation, never satisfied, never still. Flocks of starlings, rustling like silk, flew to fresh pasture, driven by the same necessity of movement, and the smaller birds, the finches and the larks, scattered from tree to hedge as if compelled. Nat watched them, and he watched the seabirds, too. Down in the bay, they waited for the tide. They had more patience. Oyster catchers, redshank, sanderling, and curlew watched by the water's edge. As the slow sea sucked at the shore and then withdrew, leaving the strip of seaweed bare and the shingle churned, the seabirds raced and ran upon the beaches. Then, that same impulse to flight seized upon them, too. Crying, whistling, calling, they skimmed to the placid sea and left the shore. Make haste, make speed, hurry and be gone. Yet where, and to what purpose? The restless urge of autumn, unsatisfying, sad, had put a spell upon them, and they must flock and wheel and cry. They must spill themselves of motion before winter came. Perhaps, thought Nat, munching his pasty by the cliff's edge. A message comes to the birds in autumn, like a warning. Winter is coming. Many of them perish. And like people who, apprehensive of death before their time, drive themselves to work or folly, the birds do likewise. The birds had been more restless than ever this fall of the year, the agitation more marked because the days were still. As the tractor traced its path up and down the western hills, the figure of the farmer silhouetted on the driving seat, the whole machine and the man upon it, would be lost momentarily in the great cloud of wheeling, crying birds. There were many more than usual. Nat was sure of this. Always, in autumn, they followed the plow, but not in great flocks like these, nor with such clamor. Nat remarked upon it when hedging was finished for the day. Yes, said the farmer. There are more birds about than usual. I've noticed it, too. And daring some of them, taking no notice of the tractor. One or two gulls came so close to my head this afternoon I thought they'd knock my cap off. As it was, I could scarcely see what I was doing when they were overhead, and I had the sun in my eyes. I have a notion the weather will change. It will be a hard winter. That's why the birds are restless. Nat, tramping home across the fields and down the lane to his cottage, saw the birds still flocking over the western hills in the last glow of the sun. No wind, and the gray sea calm and full. Campion in bloom yet in the hedges, and the air mild. The farmer was right, though, and it was that night the weather turned. Nat's bedroom faced east. He woke just after 2 and heard the wind in the chimney. Not the storm and bluster of a southwesterly gale, bringing the rain, but east wind, cold and dry. It sounded hollow in the chimney, and a loose slate rattled on the roof. Nat listened, and he could hear the sea roaring in the bay. Even the air in the small bedroom had turned chill. A draft came under the skirting of the door, blowing upon the bed. Nat drew the blanket round him, leaned closer to the back of his sleeping wife, and stayed wakeful, watchful, aware of misgiving without cause. Then he heard the tapping on the window. There was no creeper on the cottage walls to break loose and scratch upon the pane. He listened, and the tapping continued until, irritated by the sound, Nat got out of bed and went to the window. He opened it, and as he did so, something brushed his hand, jabbing at his knuckles, grazing the skin. Then he saw the flutter of the wings, and it was gone, over the roof, behind the cottage. It was a bird. What kind of bird, he could not tell. The wind must have driven it to shelter on the sill. He shut the window and went back to bed, but, feeling his knuckles wet, put his mouth to the scratch. The bird had drawn blood. frightened, he supposed, and bewildered. The bird, seeking shelter, had stabbed at him in the darkness. Once more he settled himself to sleep. Presently, the tapping came again, this time more forceful, more insistent. And now his wife woke at the sound, and, turning in the bed, said to him, "See to the window, Nat, it's rattling." "I've already seen to it," he told her. "There's some bird there trying to get in. Can't you hear the wind? It's blowing from the east, driving the birds to shelter." "Oh, send them away," she said. "I can't sleep with that noise." He went to the window for the second time, and now when he opened it, there was not one bird upon the sill, but half a dozen. They flew straight into his face, attacking him. He shouted, striking out at them with his arms, scattering them. Like the first one, they flew over the roof and disappeared. Quickly, he let the window fall and latched it. "Did you hear that?" he said. "They went for me, tried to peck my eyes." He stood by the window, peering into the darkness, and could see nothing. His wife, heavy with sleep, murmured from the bed. "I'm not making it up," he said, angry at her suggestion. "I tell you, the birds were on the sill, trying to get into the room." Suddenly, a frightened cry came from the room across the passage, where the children slept. "It's Jill," said his wife, roused at the sound, sitting up in bed. "Oh, go to her, see what's the matter." Nat lit the candle, but when he opened the bedroom door to cross the passage, the draft blew out the flame. There came a second cry of terror, this time from both children, and stumbling into their room, he felt the beating of wings about him in the darkness. The window was wide open. Through it came the birds, hitting first the ceiling and the walls, then swerving in mid-flight, turning to the children in their beds. "It's all right, I'm here," shouted Nat, and the children flung themselves, screaming, upon him, while in the darkness the birds rose and dived and came for him again. "What is it, Nat? What's happened?" his wife called from the further bedroom, and swiftly he pushed the children through the door to the passage and shut it upon them, so that he was alone now in their bedroom with the birds. He seized a blanket from the nearest bed, and, using it as a weapon, flung it to right and left about him in the air. He felt the thud of bodies, heard the fluttering of wings, but they were not yet defeated, for again and again they returned to the assault, jabbing his hands, his head, the little stabbing beaks sharp as pointed forks. The blanket became a weapon of defense. He wound it about his head, and then in greater darkness beat at the birds with his bare hands. He dared not stumble to the door and open it, lest in doing so the birds should follow him. How long he fought with them in the darkness he could not tell, but at last the beating of the wings about him lessened and then withdrew, and through the density of the blanket he was aware of light. He waited, listened. There was no sound except the fretful crying of one of the children from the bedroom beyond. The fluttering, the whirring of the wings had ceased. He took the blanket from his head and stared about him. The cold gray morning light exposed the room. Dawn and the open window had called the living birds. The dead lay on the floor. Nat gazed at the little corpses, shocked and horrified. They were all small birds, none of any size. There must have been 50 of them lying there upon the floor. There were robins, finches, sparrows, larks, and bramblings, birds that by nature's law kept to their own flock and their own territory, and now, joining with one another in their urge for battle, had destroyed themselves against the bedroom walls or in the strife had been destroyed by him. Some had lost feathers in the fight. Others had blood, his blood, upon their beaks. Sickened, Nat went to the window and stared out across his patch of garden to the fields. It was bitter cold, and the ground had all the hard black look of frost. Not white frost, to shine in the morning sun, but the black frost that the east wind brings. The sea, fiercer now with the turning tide, white-capped and steep, broke harshly in the bay. Of the birds there was no sign. Not a sparrow chattered in the hedge beyond the garden gate. No early missel thrush or blackbird pecked on the grass for worms. There was no sound at all but the east wind and the sea. And we'll be back with more right after this.
FM 104.9 WSKV.
Tune in on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. right here on Pickup Country 104.9.
Online, live, or on demand at listenlikealocal.com with your mobile app from the Google Play or App Store or on Apple Podcasts for the Pick Your Own Adventure series, where you and you alone are in charge of what happens in the journey. Danger, choice, adventure, and consequence. Are you prepared? The wrong decision could end a disaster, or worse. Live listeners can choose your path by texting WSKV in real time to 606-663-2811. The first text will control the next choice. Text 606-663-2811 during Pick Your Own Adventure and see how your stories unfold.
Hey, this is Rachel Crow. The Kentucky Department of Health and Family Services say nursing homes and other long-term care providers are advised to restrict access to visitors and consult CDC guidelines for long-term care facilities. This message is brought to you by Pickup Country 104.9 WSKV.
Nat shut the window and the door of the small bedroom and went back across the passage to his own. His wife sat up in bed, one child asleep beside her, the smaller in her arms, his face bandaged. The curtains were tightly drawn across the window, the candles lit. Her face looked garish in the yellow light. She shook her head for silence. "He's sleeping now," she whispered. "But only just. Something must have cut him. There was blood at the corner of his eyes. Jill said it was the birds. She said she woke up and the birds were in the room." His wife looked up at Nat, searching his face for confirmation. She looked terrified, bewildered, and he did not want her to know that he was also shaken, dazed almost, by the events of the past few hours. "There are birds in there," he said. "Dead birds, nearly 50 of them. Robins, wrens, all the little birds from hereabouts. It's as though a madness seized them with the east wind." He sat down on the bed beside his wife and held her hand. "It's the weather," he said. "It must be that. It's the hard weather. They aren't the birds, maybe, from here around. They've been driven down from up country." "But, Nat," whispered his wife, "it's only this night that the weather turned. There's been no snow to drive them, and they can't be hungry yet. There's food for them out there in the fields." "It's the weather," repeated Nat. "I tell you, it's the weather." His face, too, was drawn and tired, like hers. They stared at one another for a while without speaking. "I'll go downstairs and make a cup of tea," he said. The sight of the kitchen reassured him, the cups and saucers neatly stacked upon the dresser, the table and chairs, his wife's roll of knitting on her basket chair, the children's toys in a corner cupboard. He knelt down, raked out the old embers, and relit the fire. The glowing sticks brought normality, the steaming kettle and the brown teapot, comfort and security. He drank his tea, carried a cup up to his wife. Then he washed in the scullery and, putting on his boots, opened the back door. The sky was hard and leaden, and the brown hills that had gleamed in the sun the day before looked dark and bare. The east wind, like a razor, stripped the trees and the leaves, crackling and dry, shivered and scattered with the wind's blast. Nat stubbed the earth with his boot. It was frozen hard. He had never known a change so swift and sudden. Black winter had descended in a single night. The children were awake now. Jill was chattering upstairs, and young Johnny crying once again. Nat heard his wife's voice, soothing, comforting. Presently, they came down. He had breakfast ready for them, and the routine of the day began. "Did you drive away the birds?" asked Jill, restored to calm because of the kitchen fire, because of day, because of breakfast. "Yes, they've all gone now," said Nat. "It was the east wind brought them in. They were frightened and lost. They wanted shelter." "They tried to peck us," said Jill. "They went for Johnny's eyes." "Oh, fright made them do that," said Nat. They didn't know where they were in the dark bedroom. I hope they won't come again, said Jill. Perhaps if we put bread for them outside the window, they will eat that and fly away. She finished her breakfast and then went for her coat and hood, her school books, and her satchel. Nat said nothing, but his wife looked at him across the table. A silent message passed between them. I'll walk with her to the bus, he said. I don't go to the farm today. And while the child was washing in the scullery, he said to his wife, Keep all the windows closed, and the doors too, just to be on the safe side. I'll go to the farm, find out if they heard anything in the night. Then he walked with his small daughter up the lane. She seemed to have forgotten her experience of the night before. She danced ahead of him, chasing the leaves, her face whipped with the cold and rosy under the pixie hood. Is it going to snow, Dad? She said. It's cold enough. He glanced up at the bleak sky, felt the wind tear at his shoulders. No, he said. It's not going to snow. This is a black winter, not a white one. All the while, he searched the hedgerows for the birds, glanced over the top of them to the fields beyond, looked to the small wood above the farm where the rooks and jackdaws gathered. He saw none. The other children waited by the bus stop, muffled, hooded like Jill, the faces white and pinched with cold. Jill ran to them, waving. My dad says it won't snow, she called. It's going to be a black winter. She said nothing of the birds. She began to push and struggle with another little girl. The bus came ambling up the hill. Nat saw her onto it, then turned and walked back toward the farm. It was not his day for work, but he wanted to satisfy himself that all was well. Jim, the cowman, was clattering in the yard. Boss around? Asked Nat. Gone to market, said Jim. It's Tuesday, isn't it? He clumped off round the corner of a shed. He had no time for Nat. Nat was said to be superior. Read books and the like. Nat had forgotten it was Tuesday. This showed how the events of the preceding night had shaken him. He went to the back door of the farmhouse and heard Mrs. Trigg singing in the kitchen, the wireless making a background to her song. Are you there, missus? Called out Nat. She came to the door, beaming, broad, a good-tempered woman. Hello, Mr. Hawken, she said. Can you tell me where this cold is coming from? Is it Russia? I've never seen such a change. And it's going on, the wireless says. Something to do with the Arctic Circle. We didn't turn on the wireless this morning, said Nat. Fact is, we had trouble in the night. Are the kiddies poorly? No. He hardly knew how to explain it. Now, in daylight, the battle of the birds would sound absurd. He tried to tell Mrs. Trigg what had happened, but he could see from her eyes that she thought his story was the result of a nightmare. Sure, they were real birds, she said, smiling, with proper feathers and all, not the funny-shaped kind that the men see after closing hours on a Saturday night. Mrs. Trigg, he said, there are 50 dead birds, robins, wrens, and such, lying low on the floor of the children's bedroom. They went for me. They tried to go for young Johnny's eyes. Mrs. Trigg stared at him doubtfully. Well, there now, she answered. I suppose the weather brought them. Once in the bedroom, they wouldn't know where they were to. Foreign birds, maybe, from that Arctic Circle. No, said Nat. They were the birds you see about here every day. Funny thing, said Mrs. Trigg. No explaining it, really. You ought to write up and ask the guardian. They'd have some answer for it. Well, I must be getting on. She nodded, smiled, and went back into the kitchen. Nat, dissatisfied, turned to the farm gate. Had it not been for those corpses on the bedroom floor, which he must now collect and bury somewhere, he would have considered the tale exaggeration, too. Jim was standing by the gate. Had any trouble with the birds? Asked Nat. Birds? What birds? We got them up our place last night. Scores of them came in the children's bedroom. Quite savage they were. Oh? It took time for anything to penetrate Jim's head. Never heard of birds acting savage, he said at length. They get tame, like, sometimes. I've seen them come to the windows for crumbs. These birds last night were not tame. No? Cold, maybe. Hungry. You put out some crumbs. Jim was no more interested than Mrs. Trigg had been. It was, Nat thought, like air raids in the war. No one down this end of the country knew what the Plymouth folk had seen and suffered. You had to endure something yourself before it touched you. He walked back along the lane and crossed the stile to his cottage. He found his wife in the kitchen with young Johnny. See anyone? She asked. Mrs. Trigg and Jim, he answered. I don't think they believed me. Anyway, nothing wrong up there. You might take the birds away, she said. I daren't go into the room to make the beds until you do. I'm scared. Nothing to scare you now, said Nat. They're dead, aren't they? He went up with a sack and dropped the stiff bodies into it, one by one. Yes, there were 50 of them, all told, just the ordinary common birds of the hedgerow, nothing as large even as a thrush. It must have been fright that made them act the way they did. Wrens, robins, it was incredible to think of the power of their small beaks jabbing at his face and hands the night before. He took the sack out into the garden and was faced now with a fresh problem. The ground was too hard to dig. It was frozen solid, yet no snow had fallen. Nothing had happened in the past hours but the coming of the east wind. It was unnatural, queer. The weather prophets must be right. The change was something connected with the Arctic Circle. And we'll be back with more right after this.
You're listening to WSKV 104.9, Pickup Country, serving Powell, Estill, Montgomery, Clark, Lee, Bath, Menifee, Owsley, and Wolf Counties.
This message is brought to you by the Powell County Public Library. All checkout dates have been extended until further notice, and there will be no late fees on any account at this time. As the library works toward its reopening date, you can expect our book drop service to return soon, as well as our new innovative curbside service. For more information about these services and the innovative programs we offer, keep an eye on the official Powell County Public Library Facebook page for any and all updates. Free Wi-Fi is still offered at the Powell County Public Library, which is located by Stanton Elementary. To access this Wi-Fi from the comfort of your vehicle, just select the network Public Library Wireless and use the free Wi-Fi password, PCPLKY65. Free Wi-Fi is also provided at the stationary bookmobile, which is in its new location at Clay City Elementary. To take advantage of the bookmobile Wi-Fi, just sign on to the network, Bookmobile Wireless, and use the same password from the main library, which is PCPLKY65. Flyers containing all of this information are posted on the doors of the main library and on the bookmobile for reference. Although the library isn't open to the public just yet, you can still check out our online catalog by going to the Powell County Public Library's website at pcplky.org to see everything our digital collection has to offer. And you can check out digital library books, audiobooks, and magazines with the free Libby or OverDrive apps in the Google Play or App Store. All you need is the barcode number on the back of your library card to have access to thousands of ebooks and digital materials. For any questions, just message the official Powell County Public Library Facebook page or send the library an email at info@pcplky.org. The staff of the Powell County Public Library encourages the community to continue practicing safe social distancing methods as our community opens back up so that we can all be a part of Team Kentucky.
Hey, this is Hannah Wheeler. You can help stop the spread of germs by practicing social distancing, staying about 6 feet from others, especially those who are sick. This message is brought to you by Pickup Country 104.9 WSKV.
The wind seemed to cut him to the bone as he stood there uncertainly, holding the sack. He could see the white-capped seas breaking down under in the bay. He decided to take the birds to the shore and bury them. When he reached the beach below the headland, he could scarcely stand. The force of the east wind was so strong. It hurt to draw breath, and his bare hands were blue. Never had he known such cold, not in all the bad winters he could remember. It was low tide. He crunched his way over the shingle to the softer sand, and then, his back to the wind, ground a pit in the sand with his heel. He meant to drop the birds into it, but as he opened up the sack, the force of the wind carried them, lifted them, as though in flight again, and they were blown away from him, along the beach, tossed like feathers, spread and scattered, the bodies of the 50 frozen birds. There was something ugly in the sight. He did not like it. The dead birds were swept away from him by the wind. "The tide will take them when it turns," he said to himself. He looked out to sea and watched the crested breakers, combing green. They rose stiffly, curled, and broke again. And because it was ebb tide, the roar was distant, more remote, lacking the sound and thunder of the flood. Then he saw them, the gulls, out there riding the seas. What he had thought at first to be the white caps of the waves were gulls, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands. They rose and fell in the trough of the seas, head to the wind, like a mighty fleet at anchor waiting on the tide. To eastward and to the west, the gulls were there. They stretched as far as his eye could reach in close formation, line upon line. Had the sea been still, they would have covered the bay like a white cloud, head to head, body packed to body. Only the east wind, whipping the sea to breakers, hid them from the shore. Nat turned, and, leaving the beach, climbed the steep path home. Someone should know of this. Someone should be told. Something was happening, because of the east wind and the weather, that he did not understand. He wondered if he should go to the call box by the bus stop and ring up the police. Yet what could they do? What could anyone do? Tens of thousands of gulls riding up the sea there in the bay because of storm, because of hunger. The police would think him mad, or drunk, or take the statement from him with great calm. "Thank you, yes, the matter has already been reported. The hard weather is driving the birds inland in great numbers." Nat looked about him. Still no sign of any other bird. Perhaps the cold has sent them all from up country? As he drew near to the cottage, his wife came to meet him at the door. She called to him, excited. "Nat," she said, "it's on the wireless. They've just read out a special news bulletin. I've written it down." "What's on the wireless?" he said. "About the birds," she said. "It's not only here, it's everywhere. In London, all over the country. Something has happened to the birds." Together they went into the kitchen. He read the piece of paper lying on the table. "Statement from the Home Office at 11 a.m. today. Reports from all over the country are coming in hourly about the vast quantity of birds flocking above towns, villages, and outlying districts, causing obstruction and damage, and even attacking individuals. It is thought that the Arctic airstream, at present covering the British Isles, is causing birds to migrate south in immense numbers, and that intense hunger may drive these birds to attack human beings. Householders are warned to see to their windows, doors, and chimneys, and to take reasonable precautions for the safety of their children. A further statement will be issued later." A kind of excitement seized Nat. He looked at his wife in triumph. "There you are," he said. "Let's hope they'll hear that at the farm. Mrs. Trigg will know it wasn't any story. It's true, all over the country. I've been telling myself all morning there's something wrong. And just now, down on the beach, I looked out to sea and there are gulls. Thousands of them. Tens of thousands. You couldn't put a pin between their heads. And they're all out there, riding on the sea, waiting." "What are they waiting for, Nat?" she asked. He stared at her, then looked down again at the piece of paper. "I don't know," he said slowly. "It says here the birds are hungry." He went over to the drawer where he kept his hammer and tools. "What are you going to do, Nat?" "See to the windows, and the chimneys too, like they tell you." "You think they would break in with the windows shut? Those sparrows and robins and such? Why, how could they?" He did not answer. He was not thinking of the robins and the sparrows. He was thinking of the gulls.
He went upstairs and worked there the rest of the morning, boarding the windows of the bedrooms, filling up the chimney bases. Good that it was his free day and he was not working at the farm. It reminded him of the old days, at the beginning of the war. He was not married then, and he had made all the blackout boards for his mother's house in Plymouth. Made the shelter, too. Not that it had been of any use when the moment came. He wondered if they would take these precautions up at the farm. He doubted it. Too easygoing, Harry Trigg and his missus. Maybe they'd laugh at the whole thing, go off to a dance or a whist drive. "Dinner's ready," she called him from the kitchen. "All right, coming down." He was pleased with his handiwork. The frames fitted nicely over the little panes and at the bases of the chimneys. When dinner was over and his wife was washing up, Nat switched on to the 1 o'clock news. The same announcement was repeated, the one which she had taken down during the morning. But the news bulletin enlarged upon it. "The flocks of birds have caused dislocation in all areas," read the announcer. "And in London, the sky was so dense at 10 o'clock this morning that it seemed as if the city was covered by a vast black cloud. The birds settled on rooftops, on window ledges, and on chimneys. The species included blackbird, thrush, the common house sparrow, and, as might be expected in the metropolis, a vast quantity of pigeons and starlings, and that frequenter of the London River, the black-headed gull. The sight has been so unusual that traffic came to a standstill in many thoroughfares. Work was abandoned in shops and offices, and the streets and pavements were crowded with people standing about to watch the birds." Various incidents were recounted. The suspected reason of cold and hunger stated again, and warnings to householders repeated. The announcer's voice was smooth and suave. Nat had the impression that this man, in particular, treated the whole business as he would an elaborate joke. There would be others like him, hundreds of them, who did not know what it was to struggle in darkness with a flock of birds. There would be parties tonight in London, like the ones they gave on election nights. People standing about, shouting and laughing, getting drunk. "Come and watch the birds!" Nat switched off the wireless. He got up and started work on the kitchen windows. His wife watched him, young Johnny at her heels. "What, boards for down here, too?" she said. "Why, I'll have to light up before 3 o'clock. I see no call for boards down here."
"Better be sure than sorry," answered Nat. "I'm not going to take any chances."
"What they ought to do," she said, "is to call the army out and shoot the birds. That would soon scare them off."
"Let them try," said Nat. "How'd they set about it?"
"They have the army to the docks," she answered. "When the dockers strike, the soldiers go down and unload the ships."
"Yes," said Nat, "and the population of London is 8 million or more. Think of all the buildings, all the flats and houses. Do you think they've enough soldiers to go around shooting birds from every roof?"
"I don't know, but something should be done. They ought to do something."
Nat thought to himself that they were no doubt considering the problem at that very moment. But whatever they decided to do in London and the big cities would not help the people here, 300 miles away. Each householder must look after his own.
"How are we off for food?" he said.
"Now, Nat, whatever next?"
"Never mind. What have you got in the larder?"
"It's shopping day tomorrow, you know that. I don't keep uncooked food hanging about. It goes off. Butcher doesn't call till the day after. But I can't bring back something when I go in tomorrow."
Nat did not want to scare her. He thought it possible that she might not go to town tomorrow. He looked in the larder for himself and in the cupboard where she kept her tins. They would do for a couple of days. Bread was low.
"What about the baker?"
"He comes tomorrow, too."
He saw she had flour. If the baker did not call, she had enough to bake one loaf.
"We'd be better off in the old days," he said, "when the women baked twice a week and had pilchards salted, and there was food for a family to last a siege if need be."
"Oh, I've tried the children with tinned fish. They don't like it," she said.
Nat went on hammering the boards across the kitchen windows. Candles. They were low in candles, too. That must be another thing she meant to buy tomorrow. Well, it could not be helped.
they must go early to bed tonight. That was, if... He got up and went out of the back door, and stood in the garden, looking down toward the sea. There had been no sun all day, and now, at barely 3 o'clock, a kind of darkness had already come, the sky sullen, heavy, colorless like salt. He could hear the vicious sea drumming on the rocks. He walked down the path, halfway to the beach, and then he stopped. He could see the tide had turned. The rock that had shone in mid-morning was now covered, but it was not the sea that held his eyes. The gulls had risen. They were circling, hundreds of them, thousands of them, lifting their wings against the wind. It was the gulls that made the darkening of the sky, and they were silent. They made not a sound. They just went on soaring and circling, rising, falling, trying their strength against the wind. And we'll be back with more right after this.
104.9 FM, WSKB.
Tune in on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. right here on Pickup Country 104.9.
Online, live, or on demand at listenlikealocal.com with your mobile app from the Google Play or App Store or on Apple Podcasts for the Pick Your Own Adventure series, where you and you alone are in charge of what happens in the journey. Danger, choice, adventure, and consequence. Are you prepared? The wrong decision could end a disaster, or worse. Live listeners can choose your path by texting WSKV in real time to 606-663-2811. The first text will control the next choice. Text 606-663-2811 during Pick Your Own Adventure and see how your stories unfold.
Hey, this is Anna Klein.
And John Lenny.
We're Grits and Soul. You can help stop the spread of the COVID-19 virus. Please avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth.
If you wear a mask, bandana, or scarf to cover your face, be sure to cover your nose and mouth.
Be cautious about touching your face while adjusting it throughout the day, and wash your hands regularly or wear gloves to prevent further spreading of germs. Stay well. This message is brought to you by Pickup Country 104.9 WSKV.
Eastern Kentucky's Country, WSKV 104.9 FM.
And on the web
at WSKVFM.com.
This message is brought to you by the Powell County Public Library. All checkout dates have been extended until further notice, and there will be no late fees on any account at this time. As the library works towards its reopening date, you can expect our book drop service to return soon, as well as our new innovative curbside service. For more information about these services and the innovative programs we offer, keep an eye on the official Powell County Public Library Facebook page for any and all updates. Free Wi-Fi is still offered at the Powell County Public Library, which is located by Stanton Elementary. To access this Wi-Fi from the comfort of your vehicle, just select the network Public Library Wireless and use the free Wi-Fi password PCPLKY65. Free Wi-Fi is also provided at the stationary bookmobile, which is in its new location at the Clay City Elementary. To take advantage of the bookmobile Wi-Fi, just sign on to the network Bookmobile Wireless and use the same password for the main library, which is PCPLKY65. Flyers containing all of this information are posted on the doors of the main library and on the bookmobile for reference. Although the library isn't open to the public yet, you can still check out our online catalog by going to the Powell County Public Library's website at pcplky.org to see everything our digital collection has to offer. And you can check out digital library books, audiobooks, and magazines with the free Libby or OverDrive apps in the Google Play or App Store. All you need is the barcode number on the back of your library card to have access to thousands of ebooks and digital materials. For any questions, just message the official Powell County Public Library Facebook page or send the library an email at info@pcplky.org. The staff of the Powell County Public Library encourages the community to continue practicing safe and social distancing methods as our community opens back up so that we can all be a part of Team Kentucky.
You can help prevent COVID-19 by knowing the signs and symptoms. If you have traveled to a high-risk area or been in contact with someone who tested positive for the virus and developed fever, cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider for further instructions. Get the facts at kycovid19.ky.gov because we're all part of Team Kentucky.
This message brought to you by Pickup Country, 104.9 WSKV.
Nat turned. He ran up the path, back to the cottage. "I'm going for Jill," he said. "I'll wait for her at the bus stop." "What's the matter?" asked his wife. "You've gone quite white." "Keep Johnny inside," he said. "Keep the door shut. Light up now and draw the curtains." "It's only just gone 3, she said. "Never mind. Do what I tell you." He looked inside the tool shed outside the back door. Nothing there of much use. A spade was too heavy and a fork no good. He took the hoe. It was the only possible tool and light enough to carry. He started walking up the lane to the bus stop and now and again glanced back over his shoulder. The gulls had risen higher now. Their circles were broader, wider. They were spreading out in huge formation across the sky. He hurried on. Although he knew the bus would not come to the top of the hill before 4 o'clock, he had to hurry. He passed no one on the way. He was glad of this. No time to stop and chatter. At the top of the hill, he waited. He was much too soon. There was half an hour still to go. The east wind came whipping across the fields from the higher ground. He stamped his feet and blew upon his hands. In the distance, he could see the clay hills, white and clean, against the heavy pallor of the sky. Something black rose from behind them, like a smudge at first, then widening, becoming deeper, and the smudge became a cloud, and the cloud divided again into 5 other clouds, spreading north, east, south, and west. And they were not clouds at all, they were birds. He watched them travel across the sky. And as one section passed overhead, within 200 or 300 feet of him, he knew from their speed, they were bound inland, up country. And they had no business with the people here on the peninsula. They were rooks, crows, jackdaws, magpies, jays, all birds that usually preyed upon the smaller species. But this afternoon, they were bound on some other mission. "They've been given the towns," thought Nat. "They know what they have to do. We don't matter so much here. The gulls will serve for us. The others go to the towns." He went to the call box, stepped inside, and lifted the receiver. The exchange would do. They would pass the message on. "I'm speaking from the highway," he said. "By the bus stop. I want to report large formations of birds traveling up country. The gulls are also forming in the bay." "All right," answered the voice, laconic, weary. "You'll be sure and pass this message on to the proper quarter?" "Yes, yes." Impatient now, fed up. The buzzing note resumed. "She's another," thought Nat. "She doesn't care. Maybe she's had to answer calls all day. She hopes to go to the pictures tonight. She'll squeeze some fellow's hand and point up at the sky and say, 'Look at all them birds.' She doesn't care." The bus came lumbering up the hill. Jill climbed out, and 3 or 4 other children. The bus went on toward the town. "What's the hoe for, Dad?" They crowded around him, laughing, pointing. "I just brought it along," he said. "Come on now, let's get home. It's cold, no hanging about. Here, you, I'll watch you across the fields. See how fast you can run." He was speaking to Jill's companions, who came from different families, living in the council houses. A shortcut would take them to the cottages. "We want to play a bit in the lane," said one of them. "No, you don't. You go off home or I'll tell your mammy," they whispered to one another, round-eyed, then scuttled off across the fields. Jill stared at her father, her mouth sullen. "We always play in the lane," she said. "Not tonight, you don't," he said. "Come on now, no dawdling." He could see the gulls now, circling the fields, coming in toward the land. Still silent, still no sound. "Look, Dad, look over there. Look at all the gulls." "Yes, hurry now." "Where are they flying to? Where are they going?" "Up country, I dare say, where it's warmer." He seized her hand and dragged her after him along the lane. "Don't go so fast, I can't keep up." The gulls were copying the rooks and crows. They were spreading out in formation across the sky. They headed, in bands of thousands, to the 4 compass points. "Dad, what is it? What are the gulls doing?" They were not intent upon their flight, as the crows, as the jackdaws had been. They still circled overhead. Nor did they fly so high. It was as though they waited upon some signal, as though some decision had yet to be given. The order was not clear. "Do you want me to carry you, Jill? Here, come pick a back." This way, he might put on speed, but he was wrong. Jill was heavy, she kept slipping, and she was crying, too. His sense of urgency, of fear, had communicated itself to the child. "I wish the gulls would go away. I don't like them. They're coming closer to the lane." He put her down again. He started running, swinging Jill after him. As they went past the farm turning, he saw the farmer backing his car out of the garage. Nat called to him. "Can you give us a lift?" he said. "What's that?" Mr. Trigg turned in the driving seat and stared at them. Then a smile came to his cheerful, rubicund face. "It looks as though we're in for some fun," he said. "Have you seen the gulls? Jim and I are going to take a crack at them. Everyone's gone bird crazy, talking of nothing else. I hear you were troubled in the night. Want a gun?" Nat shook his head. The small car was packed. There was just room for Jill if she crouched on top of patrol tins on the back seat. "I don't want a gun," said Nat, "but I'd be obliged if you'd run Jill home. She's scared of the birds." He spoke briefly. He did not want to talk in front of Jill. "Okay," said the farmer. "I'll take her home. Why don't you stop behind and join the shooting match? We'll make the feathers fly." Jill climbed in, and turning the car, the driver sped up the lane. Nat followed after. Trigg must be crazy. What use was a gun against a sky of birds? Now Nat was not responsible for Jill. He had time to look about him. The birds were circling still above the fields. Mostly herring gull, but the black-backed gull amongst them. Usually they kept apart. Now they were united. Some bond had brought them together. It was the black-backed gull that attacked the smaller birds, and even newborn lambs, so he'd heard. He'd never seen it done. He remembered this now, though, looking above him in the sky. They were coming in toward the farm. They were circling lower in the sky, and the black-backed gulls were to the front. The black-backed gulls were leading. The farm, then, was their target. They were making for the farm. Nat increased his pace toward his own cottage. He saw the farmer's car turn and come back along the lane. It drew up beside him with a jerk. "The kid has run inside," said the farmer. "Your wife was watching for her. Well, what do you make of it? They're saying in town the Russians have done it. The Russians have poisoned the birds." "How could they know that?" asked Nat. "Don't ask me. You know how stories get around. Will you join my shooting match?" "No, I'll get along home. The wife will be worried else." "My missus says if you could eat gull, there'd be some sense in it," said Trigg. "We'd have roast gull, baked gull, and pickle 'em into the bargain. You wait until I let off a few barrels into the brutes. That'll scare 'em." "Have you boarded your windows?" asked Nat. "No, lot of nonsense. They like to scare you on the wireless. I've had more to do today than to go round boarding up my windows." "I'd board them now if I were you." "Ah, darn, you're windy. Like to come to our place to sleep?" "No, thanks all the same." "All right, see you in the morning. Give you a gull breakfast." The farmer grinned and turned his car to the farm entrance. Nat hurried on, past the little wood, past the old barn, and then across the stile to the remaining field. As he jumped the stile, he heard the whirr of wings. A black-backed gull dived down at him from the sky, missed, swerved in flight, and rose to dive again. In a moment it was joined by others, 6, 7, a dozen, black-backed and herring mixed. Nat dropped his hoe. The hoe was useless. Covering his head with his arms, he ran toward the cottage. They kept coming at him from the air, silent save for the beating wings, the terrible, fluttering wings. He could feel the blood on his hands, his wrists, his neck. Each stab of a swooping beak tore his flesh. If only he could keep them from his eyes. Nothing else mattered. He must keep them from his eyes. They had not learned yet how to cling to a shoulder, how to rip clothing, how to dive in mass upon the head, upon the body. But with each dive, with each attack, they became bolder. and they had no thought for themselves. When they dived low and missed, they crashed, bruised and broken, on the ground. As Nat ran, he stumbled, kicking their spent bodies in front of him. He found the door. He hammered upon it with his bleeding hands. Because of the boarded windows, no light shone. Everything was dark. "Let me in!" he shouted. "It's Nat! Let me in!" He shouted loud to make himself heard above the whir of the gull's wings. Then he saw the gannet, poised for the dive, above him in the sky. The gulls circled, retired, soared, one after another, against the wind. Only the gannet remained. One single gannet above him in the sky. The wings folded suddenly to its body. It dropped like a stone. Nat screamed, and the door opened. He stumbled across the threshold, and his wife threw her weight against the door. They heard the thud of the gannet as it fell. His wife dressed his wounds. They were not deep. The backs of his hands had suffered most, and his wrists. Had he not worn a cap, they would have reached his head. As to the gannet could have split his skull. The children were crying, of course. They had just seen the blood on their father's hands. "It's all right now," he told them. "I'm not hurt. Just a few scratches. You play with Johnny, Jill. Mammy will wash these cuts." He half shut the door to the scullery so that they could not see. His wife was ashen. She began running water from the sink. "I saw them overhead," she whispered. "They began collecting just as Jill ran in with Mr. Trigg. I shut the door fast and it jammed. That's why I couldn't open it at once when you came." "Thank God they waited for me," he said. "Jill would have fallen at once. One bird alone would have done it." Furtively, so as not to alarm the children, they whispered together as she bandaged his hands in the back of his neck. "They're flying inland," he said. "Thousands of them. Rooks, crows, all the bigger birds. I saw them from the bus stop. They're making for the towns." "But what can they do, Nat?" "They'll attack. Go for everyone out in the streets. Then they'll try the windows, the chimneys. Why don't the authorities do something? Why don't they get the army, get machine guns, anything?" "There's been no time. Nobody's prepared. We'll hear what they have to say on the 6 o'clock news." Nat went back into the kitchen, followed by his wife. Johnny was playing quietly on the floor. Only Jill looked anxious. "I can hear the birds," she said. "Listen, Dad." So we're going to stop there tonight with the story and continue this next Thursday night. But before I leave you guys for the night, I want to talk about the Friends of the Powell County Public Library's book sale one more time with you all. It's this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., and we're having a blind book sale for $5 a piece. The bags are bagged by genre, so there's romance, science fiction and fantasy, mystery, all kinds of things. And it's a surprise in each bag. So I hope you guys will stop by the library this weekend on this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. for the Friends of the Powell County Public Library's Blind Book Sale. All right, thank you guys and have a wonderful night.